I made it in studio. I was over there doing Trade Center with Duffy and the boys. The last hit wrapped up around 3:53. And then I had to make my way from Studio 6 over here to the radio studio. I haven't been in here since October, Noodles, when you and I were
know.
In here. It's been a long time.
Buddy, you're already trending on Twitter because you're a meme. Duffy's on national TV, and there's you in the background doing the strut with the knapsack.
Yes, made the call. I made the call to go knapsack because my wife actually, I had an old, like, leather kind of 70s greasy shoulder bag.
That's what you need,
I should have worn that. With the suit, I feel good. I got my JVR State and Liberty suit on today. I feel good. I look good.
I bet your Festchuk has a greasy old, like, do you have a greasy old, like, briefcase or knapsack that you carry around your notes in, or what do you have?
Oh, yeah. My bags are the worst. The sports writing community is not known for its haberdashery and fine leather goods in the press box, let's say.
Yeah, I've seen you walking around up there with something. It's shaggy, it's old, it's weathered. But it's got years on it, right? It's got history. It's got character.
It's like your suit. It's free.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it's a free suit, free bag. And that's what I had. My knapsack that I had was a TSN knapsack. And I didn't make the same mistake I made last time. When I was in here in October, I didn't bring anything in with me. Like, I didn't bring a laptop. I didn't bring an iPad. I had my phone. And I remember showing up, and everyone else, like Noodles, you were in there. O was in there. Yeah. MJ's in there. Everyone's got, like, multiple laptops, multiple iPads, multiple chargers. And I was on juice. I was on, like, 28% at, like, 8:45 a.m. And I said, I'm not doing that again. So I loaded up with the bag. But because I had to do the late hit, I had to get over to the studio. I had to walk behind Duffy. I wasn't going to sit up there. I had to go.
Yeah, I know. And you know what? Like, I love Trade Center, but 8 a.m. and the first trade came at, what, like 11 or something?
Nothing
like, you're
happened.
Like,
nothing.
Just feathers. And like, we have some great chats because you're reacting from, you know, previous. We'll get into the Foligno trade and David Riddick. Like, you know, a lot of these managers got ahead of it. So you can even react a week back. But we probably already talked about it. You know, if it wasn't for a weekend, we would have talked about Foligno and Riddick. We would have talked about Taylor Hall and all of that, just making it under the – I guess Taylor Hall would be considered a trade today because it got announced after midnight. Mm-hmm. Was that the rule?
Yeah, I think it counted. I think it counted as an official trade on deadline day.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, I personally thought – I don't know how you guys felt, but I personally thought – there was going to be a lot more activity this year just based on expansion coming. Like, I guess you might see a lot more at the draft and before that because teams will start to make deals or, you know, not even make deals, but just trade a player instead of losing them in expansion. But I thought managers would have got ahead of it a little bit and said, you know what, if I'm going to lose this guy in expansion, I might as well try and do something now. Or I don't know. I was a little bit disappointed in the volume of trades, put it that way.
Yeah, there weren't that many trades. I mean, last year there were 32 day of trades, which was the most we've ever seen before. This year we'll probably get actually closer to the average than you think. The previous couple of years, I think on average it was between 17 and 20. We'll probably get there. But it was more about who was on the trade bait board. Like, it's just not names of substance. Like, Mantha's a big name, and I think that caught a lot of people off guard because he just signed a long-term deal in Detroit. He's a relatively young player. You would think a part of a core that Steve Yzerman and the Red Wings were trying to build with. But outside of that, once Hall got off the board, once Foligno got off the board, once Savard was off the board, we're not really talking impact players.
No,
if we're being honest.
Yeah, it's the term bit piece,
bit
right?
Piece.
That's O's term, right?
Bit
and
piece.
There was a lot of bit pieces.
Yeah. But I mean,
it almost makes you wonder, guys, like when you think about, you know, how much this kind of trade activity means to a league and the conversation around the league and the social media buzz around the NHL, you almost wonder if they should institute some kind of a freeze in the 5 days leading up to the deadline. I'm not sure it would hold. I'm not sure it would be respected, but it would add to the drama, right? If you got partners that are willing to broadcast all day, maybe you could wait until they're on the air before you make these deals. I don't know.
Well, I do think you've got to give the league, if that's the direction we're going here, some room to maneuver here based on the originality of this whole season and how unique this whole season is. I mean, we're dealing with COVID protocols where you've got quarantine up here. Seven of your teams have a completely different set of rules than the other 24 teams. You've got basically no revenue coming in. So I think a big part of the issue is a lot of the selling teams, a lot of the sellers probably had owners who said, you can make deals, but you can't bring money in. Making money. So you can't have these monster deals that allow for money to go back and forth. And you're dealing with a flat cap because of the pandemic. Yeah. So you've got expansion, you've got quarantine, you've got no revenue, you've got flat cap. I mean, that's a lot that is going against flexibility. And I think that was proven today.
I agree. I don't disagree with that because you kept thinking, okay, you know, is one team going to do a little bit more? Like, I thought Toronto did exactly what they needed to do.
Absolutely.
I thought Winnipeg came up one player short. I thought, Edmonton was going to try and get a top six. But again, Ken Holland, I just listened to his presser. He said, like, you know what? We everything that you just laid out, Hayes, is basically what he said. Like, and it's a flat cap. He doesn't have picks because, he's still cleaning up some of the other stuff that went on. So you're looking at some of the teams, and I know we're northern focused, but, you're looking at that Washington trade. It stood out for me. The only thing that stands out, and I don't know how you guys feel about this, is Stevie Yzerman see something in Anthony Mantha that, that we don't. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, you're in a rebuild, and it's a young player on term. And you're willing to move him, then he's seeing something that either this guy's not going to fit into the way he wants to build his team, or maybe he's selling high right now and saying, you know what, good luck, because this guy's going to be a 20-goal scorer and a 45-point guy. Like, I think he has a higher ceiling, but we don't know. And that's the, ultimately, when you come back to it, these trades or lack of them, It's kind of frustrating.
Yeah, there was not an overly active day, but again, I think if you're a Maple Leaf fan,
sure,
the Leafs stole the show over the last 48 hours. Like, there were a lot of teams here. You mentioned Winnipeg; they picked up Jordy Benn, who's a depth defenseman. Maybe he's on your third pairing, probably not. He might be your seventh defenseman. I agree with you. I thought they needed help in their top four. I think if they got that, Winnipeg's future would probably look a lot brighter, and I think I might feel a little bit different about their chances at actually pursuing a cup, even though they're still a pretty good team. But if you look at the Maple Leafs, their checklist, they basically hit everything you could possibly think they would be going for. Like, Nick Foligno is a top nine forward that can play up the left wing, probably a top six guy. Riley Nash is a depth forward who I think is probably going to play. And you get Ben Hutton, who's a depth defenseman, likely your seventh defenseman, but a legitimate NHL player who's been in the league for a handful of years. And then you go out there and get David Rittich, so you have three legitimate NHL goaltenders. Like, they hit everything. The Leafs really didn't leave any stone unturned. Now, you can talk about what they're doing with the draft. There's some Cliff Fletcher-esque mentality playing out here, draft schmaff. Like, they're not going to be drafting a lot in the next 2 years. But on the flip side of that, they didn't give up Sandin. Didn't give up Robertson, who's playing tonight. Didn't give up Amirov. Didn't give up any roster player on a cup-caliber team. So I have to credit Kyle Dubas, who was still a relatively young GM. He had a checklist, and he went out and checked off every single box. I think he did a remarkable job in the last 48 hours when the rest of the league, a lot of teams, were clearly either willing to go halfway home, quarter way home, or stayed home altogether.
Go ahead,
Dave. I think this says that he understands the stakes and he understands the moment, guys. And the moment is the Leafs moment. Like, this is the path that has been paved for them to get to a league semifinal in winning this North Division that they've been dominating. But it wasn't going to be, given to them for free. They had to shore up some weaknesses. And I agree, getting Rittich, it's massive. They needed goaltending insurance. Now, Jack Campbell and David Rittich have one thing in common: neither one has played a playoff game or won a playoff game. I know Rittich has got a few minutes in one, but he never won it. Right. So you can quibble about how good their goaltending really is, and you could say that's still a dark cloud hanging over this team. But you're right, Hayes. Like, Foligno is a Swiss Army knife guy that could play anywhere and will play anywhere happily. and ditto Hutton, nice depth defenseman that, you know, probably saves you from bringing Martin Marincin into the equation if anybody happens to get hurt of this top six D. And Riley Nash will play. You're right. He's going to play for this team and probably play pretty well as a fourth liner.
Here's the thing that I looked at, and you guys just touched on it, but I don't think you'll see Michael Hutchinson, and I don't think you'll see Marty Marincin. And in past years, you probably would have, right? So that's they are far down, far, far down on your depth chart, where if you know, if there was an injury or inconsistency, you know, especially right now, I thought I heard the Duthie say the stat, like the Leafs have played the same 6D like the last 20 games.
They've
something
been really
like that.
Lucky. There's right. not
Knock
been a lot of
wood.
Injury.
Yep. But what I'm saying is now all of a sudden, you don't have to go to the kids that are unproven or overwhelmed or coming off of injury, or you're going back to a guy who's been here for a while and you're paying him money to be, you know, a taxi squad guy in Marincin. Like now you get Hutton. Same thing with Nash. You're looking at a situation where, you know, Hayes, you and I were talking about this yesterday. Like, you know, I don't know where Engvall – I think Engvall's a guy who is a real question mark for me. I don't know if they're going to, you know, force feed him in on the third line, if he's going to go down. But now you've got options with Nash here. You know, where's Jumbo going to fit? Like, you've got players that you can lay out on the whiteboard. We know where Matthews and Marner are going to play. We know where Tavares and Nylander, with health, are going to play. Same thing with Riley and Brody. But you start laying things out on the whiteboard and go, okay, well, you know what? Spezza doesn't look his age. Like, okay, maybe he can get some minutes here on the third line, or we can do some things. But you've got enough players that you can move the deck chairs around that you're really playing with depth now.
Yeah, you are.
And that's exactly a good sign.
That's what you need. That is exactly what happens with cup-winning teams. You look up front, you can run off eight or nine guys who you know are playing. If they're healthy, they're playing. But then you're going to have upwards of four to six, maybe seven guys who I think are somewhat interchangeable, and you're probably building battles within your lineup. I mean, Nick Robertson's going tonight. They're going to give him an opportunity to play. I'm not holding my breath that he's a guy that's going to play a lot come playoff time, but if they feel like he can bring some sort of a dynamic, or they're two, three, four injuries deep, then maybe that's the guy you have to go to, and maybe you feel better about that based on where he is in your depth chart. Same thing on the back end, and more importantly in the goaltending position, which I will admit, I didn't think they were going to necessarily do this. I really didn't think they would go and look for a third-string goalie, but it raises the legitimate question about Freddie Anderson.
That scares me,
it
guys.
It absolutely scares me. And I think they're scared. I think that's what this means. They're scared. Right. They're not convinced he's going to play, or if he does, that he's going to last.
Right. I don't know where you guys stand on this. That's the first thing I thought about was, like, in a perfect world, it looks great because you've got Anderson. If he gets back to form, great. You've got a soft landing on Campbell or vice versa. I mean, if Jack ends up that it's just his year and you know what, everything he touches turns to gold, then you ride that horse too. But, you know, I said this before and I wholeheartedly believe this. The template was right in front of our eyes in Colorado last year in the bubble, where, you know, the look on Joe Sakic, I'll never forget this. I was watching it, and they went ahead, I believe, in game 7, 4-3. And Dallas came back and scored like 7 seconds later off the draw, and it hit the middle of the net. And I remember they flashed to Joe Sakic, and I thought he was going to just pass out right there.
Yeah.
Because it was like, that's what, you know, he needed a save. He needed that depth. So,
is David Rittich that guy, though? Like, if it gets to a point where Rittich has to play, is he a guy that you feel can actually win you two or three games in a row, if need be, to get to that next round until Campbell's back or Anderson's back?
I'll let you weigh in here, Dave, but I just want to finish off my thought. I think he is based on – he's a better goalie than Michael Hutchinson.
Yes.
And that's all you need to know because, like, Rittich is the guy played in the All-Star game 2 years ago. Like, you know, I think he's a real streaky goalie. He's an emotional guy. You know, if he's at a high, he's great. If he's at a low, it's a battle because he doesn't have a toolbox like other goaltenders where everything looks the same. He goes out and stops pucks. You guys saw in the back-to-back games against the Leafs, he was brilliant. But minute that they scored with a minute left and Nylander scores in overtime, his game went a little bit south. Like, it took him a week to recover, because I was doing the games up here in Ottawa. They went from Toronto up to Ottawa. But my if I had one concern now for the Toronto Maple Leafs down the stretch and into the playoffs, it's Frederik Andersen. What are we going to, where are we at with him? Like, where is he at, and is he going to be able to come back? And, you know, if not, it's Jack Campbell and David Rittich, where, you know, I think they're both really good goalies, but unproven at the playoff level.
Yeah, and I don't know how much that concerns you, Noodles. I mean, we obviously know the fairy tale stories of the Jordan Binningtons and the Matt Murrays and the Ken, going back to Ken Dryden, of the goaltenders who come in without experience and just, you know, blow the doors off the competition, win a Stanley Cup, and write it down. You know, it's a great, great story. And who's to say Jack Campbell can't be that guy, or David Rittich can't be that guy? But I think Hayes and I think we were talking about this last week, Hayes, is that, you know, that's not your ideal scenario, right? Your ideal scenario is for the horse that's played like 53 playoff games, named Frederik Andersen, gets his game back, gets his health back, and gets, most importantly, his confidence back. And he's the guy you can ride. I just don't know how likely that is right now.
Yeah, I don't think it's overly likely right now, based on what Keefe had to say over the weekend. Like, Sheldon Keefe essentially said, go ask Freddie. You know, like, it's up to him. When he feels like he's at 100%, he'll play. And if it's up to him and he's not prepared to play now, who knows where he's going to be in a week or in a month. But I also think it's a message to the rest of the players on the team. I was thinking about it last night when the news broke. And again, if you were listening to me over the past couple of weeks, I was not urgently suggesting they had to go get a third goaltender. But I think it says something about Freddie. I was working under the pretense that
I kind of was. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, no, you were.
Remember,
you absolutely
I was.
Were. You were hammering that home. And obviously the Leafs were listening to you. What I was suggesting, I guess, was if Freddie Andersen is returning and you go through Freddie, Campbell, and get to a third stringer, at that point you're probably in trouble. But Rittich is maybe a little bit of a higher caliber than I had in mind when we were thinking of whoever this was going to be that they went out and got.
Right.
And I think it sends a message to the rest of the team that if Freddie can't go, if Campbell gets injured, which again has been an issue that he's had to deal with throughout his career, we're not going to give up the season. Like, you guys have played really well. You put yourself in a position to go on a run. You deserve it. You know, we always say that. Like, for years, coaches have been saying, we need to prove to the GM, go out there and make a move, and give us a reason to continue to pursue something we believe we can pursue. I think getting Rittich is of course, about insurance if you need him. But I think it sends a pretty strong message. And
sure
I think if
does.
You're in that room and you're Matthews, Tavares, Riley, Marner, Nylander, Foligno, Nash, Hutton, Rittich, that's your GM saying, basically, cup or bust. You know, like, you go out and get it. And I think that should be a positive. I'm sure it will be perceived that way or received that way in the room.
I don't disagree with that, because what you're trying to do is have depth at every position, that if there is a falter or something, that it's next man up. And, you know, the perceived drop-off, I come back to everything is perception. And that's basically what you're saying, Hayes. Perception is the perception to Austin Matthews is that, you know, Kyle's like, I'm going to give you every opportunity here. If Freddie can't go, or if Jack's, you know, lower body injury, I'm not just going to mail it in and go, hey, we have a third guy on under contract. Let's see how it goes. It's like, we're going to shore up every position and at least give ourselves an opportunity. And I don't know, what was the Cliff Fletcher? You said, did he just say
draft
from after?
Yeah, basically.
Okay, so listen, I don't know currency. First rounder, I see people debating that if it was a bit rich for Nick Foligno. You know, ultimately, if you end up at the top of the standings, whether you're first, second, third, it's a really low pick in the first round. So it's ultimately a second rounder. You know,
and
again,
if he's your guy, like if he's your guy, I would use the analogy of trying to buy a house, where I've been in this situation before. We were looking for a house for a long time, my wife and I. We finally found the one we wanted, and we decided, let's go $3,000 over. Let's go $5,000 over. And I remember at the time thinking, man, $3,000, $5,000. We're in the house 6 years now. Imagine we didn't buy that house for an extra $3,000. And I think that's exactly what the Leafs are thinking here. Would they have preferred to pay probably a second rounder for Foligno? For Foligno, of course. But if they felt adamant, he is the missing piece. He's the guy they want. We can win a Stanley Cup here. Imagine stopping short because you wanted to give up a second instead of a first if that's the primary target. And I have to believe that was the mentality, Dave.
Yeah, and I think, you know, one of the reasons I think you pay a premium for a Nick Foligno is the same reason why you paid pretty good money for John Tavares and you were eager to get Wayne Simmonds on board and Joe Thornton on board and Jason Spezza on board, because there's a connection here, right? Like, he gets Toronto. He was 5 years old in 1993 when his dad was scoring overtime goals that helped the Leafs in that magical run to within a game of the Stanley Cup final. He gets it. He wants it. And you can't have enough of those guys. Too often in the recent history of this team, there have been guys here who didn't have that connection and didn't seem to care as much as we cared as people watching that team. And you can't say that about Nick Foligno. I think that's one of the main reasons to me it's worth a first-round pick.
Yeah, and listen, the draft over the next 2 years, Jonas Siegel tweeted this out, you know, about an hour ago. When you look at it, they've given up a lot of picks. They've given up a lot of picks. The Leafs have, I believe, three picks next year and three picks the next, although I have to confirm that based on what they've done today. But going into today, after the Foligno deal, they had seven total picks for the next two drafts. So clearly they think they can mine talent elsewhere, and obviously they didn't want to give up on Sandin, Robertson, Amirov, other prospects that they currently have in the system.
And here I'll say this too. The picks are only available to you when the draft is there, meaning if you've gone all in and it doesn't work out and Kyle decides to head in a different direction, chances are he may move a player for and retrieve some of those picks. We've seen him do that.
Yeah, he did it with Kapanen last year.
Exactly. I'm not so much worried of the lack of picks, because when it comes around to it, like, I was looking at Cap Friendly. Like, I think there's 11 contracts that are up for UFA. Like, there's 11 free agents on this team coming up. Like, he's going to have to shuffle deck chairs around heading into next season anyways. So, you know, I think I worry about I kick that can down the road. You're worrying about today. You're worrying about the next 3 months. And then deal with the draft, deal with the lack of draft picks and stuff like that after the dust has settled on the work that you're doing right now.
Absolutely.
That's the way I would look at it.
Yeah, well, and we're going to hear from Kyle Dubas. He's going to be on the show at 5:40. So Kyle Dubas coming up at 5:40. He's also going to do his press conference. I believe he's in Montreal. So that'll be happening in the next 10 or 15 minutes. We'll have that live for you right here on TSN 1050. And 1050's trade deadline coverage is powered by CertainTeed, the pro's choice for top-quality drywall, insulation, ceiling systems, premium shingles, and siding. CertainTeed Pro all the way. Dave Festruck from the Toronto Star in here. Noodles is in Ottawa. He's calling a game. He'll be around for one more segment. I'm here all afternoon. Mike Johnson will be here all afternoon as of 5 o'clock. Al's Brothers Power Rankings coming up in the 6 p.m. hour. Jay's in action tonight. Raps coming off a tough loss last night. We'll get to those as well. And, of course, the Masters and everything that took place over the course of the weekend. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, Kyle Dubas will be speaking with the media here momentarily. The Leafs are in action tonight. You can hear it right here on TSN Radio. Watch it on TSN 4. The Leafs are in Montreal, taking on the Habs. And then they've got Calgary town tomorrow night. And it sounds like David Riddick is available tomorrow. Noodles, you're in Ottawa. Dave Festruck, you're here in Toronto. And I would assume Riddick goes tomorrow night, right?
Like, you think so?
Why not? Throw him in there, former team. I love it.
I thought about that last night because I was like, you know, I'm sure he was traveling today. I don't know if he traveled with the Flames or separately or whatever. He might travel with the team just because of, you know, quarantine or whatever, just to get here safe. But, you know, do you shake hands with the guys and go, hey, it's great to meet you, and I'm going against my former team tonight? Like, I thought maybe they would just start Hutchinson tomorrow night and then give Riddick a game later this week. Like, to me, that makes sense. But you're right. Like, he might as
Why
well.
Not?
Like, I think Sheldon may say, to hell with it, go.
Like, I think Riddick might want that opportunity. Like, if he's a gamer by all accounts. I mean, that's what you've always said about him, Noodles.
Yeah.
Like, he'll want to play make an impression, and there's no you don't need a scouting report. I mean, he goes up against them every single day. He knows what he's dealing with in Calgary.
Well,
I know,
to your
but
point,
they...
sorry,
go ahead,
Noodles,
Dave.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
No,
Dave.
To your point, Noodles, I thought you made a great point about how this is an emotional guy, right? This is a guy that runs hot at times, and hey, as a franchise, just gave up on you, right? They signed Jacob Markstrom over your head. They basically said, "Hey, they're not re-signing you, pal. You're UFA. Get lost." So if that's not enough fuel for the internal fire that seems to drive David Riddick, I don't know what would be.
You're right. I just...
Okay, hold on a minute. Dubas is coming up. I think he's going up to the mic right now in Montreal. Here's Kyle Dubas.
I have him join the group as soon as possible. From my end, I felt that the group of players and coaches had deserved every effort on our end, on management, to bolster the team and try to give us as great a chance as possible down the stretch in our division and into the playoffs. So we were excited to be able to... we believe add the pieces that will continue to enhance our ability to be as competitive as possible as we go into the playoffs and roll from there. So at this point, I'll turn it over for any questions.
First up, we'll go to Terry Koshan, Toronto Sun. Go ahead, Terry.
Hey, Kyle, good afternoon. To what extent were you able to satisfy the pieces that you were looking for then? I know, I think there are probably some great expectations for Nick Foligno and what he can bring to your lineup, but everywhere else, are you what level of satisfaction have you able to add what you wanted?
Well, I think, Terry, one of the things that's our view of what we've needed has changed as different players have stepped up and different players have developed over the year and different guys have jumped into roles and excelled, and then injuries influence matters as well and sort of shift your focus onto different areas of the roster. But certainly Alex Galchenyuk's rise to prominence on our roster, it altered a little bit of what we were looking for and really let us focus up front on the thing that I really felt that we needed from the beginning, which was to try to find a player that could play up and down our lineup that had tremendous character, competitiveness, defensive responsibility, but also had skill and ability to play with any of our top three lines. So that was accomplished with Nick. Sheldon and I have talked from the summer about adding a defensively responsible right-handed center, and Riley Nash accomplished that for us. And then we shifted our focus to goaltending and what the situation here is, as we've lived the whole year with the injuries at different times to Jack and Fred. I think the one thing we didn't want to do is get down the stretch here and get into the playoffs and regret not bolstering it, which is why we elected to move with David Riddick with Calgary, and then today just shoring up our depth on defense with Ben Hutton. So we're content with the way that things have gone, and obviously we expended a lot of draft capital to make it happen, and that'll place pressure on the organization elsewhere. But I think coming off the draft that we just had, where we had a lot of picks and the early returns we feel have been promising, we have to obviously continue to develop those players, but we felt that gave us a little bit of flexibility here in the last couple days to get to work and try to improve the team in those areas.
I know last time we talked to you, you had spoken of the idea of, a top prospect being on the table if that was to come to that. How happy are you that you didn't have to go down that route here in these last 48 hours or so?
One of the major things, Terry, that we were trying to do if we could was get through the deadline with the group intact. I think the players could answer this better, but just in my observation, it's one of the tightest-knit groups we've had, and I think the spirit and the vibe of the team is very, very good, so I didn't want to take anybody out of that. And if we had to choose between our prospects and draft capital, of course, you're just trying to make an objective assessment, but the players that we have in here, they're already known people and players and athletes to us. So we know what we have in them, and we know what their work ethics like and their habits are like and where they are developmentally. And in the case of all those players, and we could argue about who's an A and who's a B, and I'll leave that to you all to do that. We were hopeful to get through the deadline without having to move any of them and just continue to develop them. So it's nice to get through it. It wasn't an absolute non-starter for us, but we're excited that we get through the deadline with those prospects still a part of our system.
Next up, we'll go to Mark Masters, TSN. Go ahead, Mark.
Kyle, what clarity do you have on what Frederik Andersen is going through right now and when he might be available to return for you guys?
Yeah, the situation with Fred is really not changed. I think Fred's carried a tremendous load for us over the last 4.5 seasons, and our main ambition with Fred now is obviously he played last on March 19th, and you know, with that said, and with the season where it's at, with about 4 weeks to go, patience and making sure that he's at 100% is the key for us, Mark. So. That's really all that we're focused on at this point is making sure that we get through the stretch and give him the chance to be at absolute 100% and be ready to roll come playoff time. He's a huge important part of what we do here, and we wanted to bolster that position, but when it comes down to it in the end, the goaltenders that have been here are the ones that have led us to this, and this was done to support them and help them and support the group overall. But when it comes to Fred, we're just continuing to focus on getting him 100% healthy and being ready to roll for us the most important time of year.
What stands out the most to you about Nick Foligno's game that made him worth what you gave up?
Well, there's a few things. I think number one, you know what you're going to get from Nick every single night. And you know, in Terry's question, he said the expectations will be high. Our expectations are just that he comes in and does everything that he's done in his career in Ottawa and Columbus. The way that he plays every single night that you can rely upon in terms of his effort level, his work rate, and his responsibility defensively, able to play against anybody in the league, able to kill penalties at a high level, and most importantly, able to make plays when he has the puck. And I think the energy and the grit that he brings to a team is infectious within the group. If you talk to players and coaches that have had him before, and just the character that he has, which in talking to people and when you're gearing up to do these things, one of the more important things for us was that the people who were coming into the room were going to be able to fit into what we're doing and become a great part of it and enhance something that we feel is already a really good thing happening. And it was all positive on that end with Nick. So on and off the ice, those are the things that we're expecting from him, which is just what he's done for his whole career in the NHL.
Next up, we'll go to Luke Fox at Sportsnet. Go ahead, Luke.
Hi, Kyle. What made Ben Hutton an attractive defenseman to try and add?
I think the thing, Luke, with Ben, when he was in the summer of 2019, he was available when he signed with LA. We had we investigated signing, and we made it, trades in that off season that brought in two defensemen, Cody Ceci and Tyson Barry, and so that was sort of what we went with at that point. And we also were having Travis Dermott come back early in the year, and we didn't want to block him out coming back off injury 2019-20. So Ben had been on our radar, and we watched him last year in LA, and then this year in Anaheim, and just think he's able to play up and down the lineup. Last year with LA, a strong run of games with Drew Doughty, and able to come in, kill penalties, and play that sort of role. We felt in terms of depth, we have a lot of guys that can come in and play on the power play and play more offensive minutes. We just wanted to bolster what we had defensively, and we feel that over his career he's done that. So that was what led us to Ben and wanted us to move down that path with him and welcome him from Anaheim to Toronto.
Do you think he can compete for a roster spot immediately?
He'll be on the roster, so
it's not. Sorry, lineup spot.
Well, I mean, he's going to have to serve the quarantine and get through that and then be ready to roll. But, you know, I'm not naive. I think we've been very fortunate with our health on the blue line, and we obviously hope that continues. But we also hope that we continue to work guys in here as the season comes down the stretch and give a little bit of life to guys that have sort of been in and out or getting some games with the Marlies, like Berenson, Liljegren. Once Sandin gets healthy, hopefully we can work Rasmussen as well. But I would expect that Ben will compete with the group, and if he wins the spot, that's great for him and great for our depth.
We'll go to Jonas Siegel, The Athletic. Go ahead, Jonas.
Hey, Kyle. How would you say your stance or approach to the trade deadline has changed over the years or evolved?
Well, it's... You know, when I first started here the first year working with Dave Nonis, we were a seller. And then the first year with Lou, we were a seller. And then the second year with Lou and just watching him and the way he operated, he felt that the team had earned the ability for us to go out and get something. We added Brian Boyle the next year, Thomas Plekanec. And then in the previous 2 years, we tried to act a little early, and it just wasn't really available this year, as you all saw. When we added Muzzin and Campbell and Clifford in the previous 2 years, they were a month out. So it just had to evolve in terms of the comfortability of getting close to the deadline. And I think, honestly, Jonas, the players and coaches made that, the way that they operate every day, and I think especially the way that the team came out of playing poorly there in the early part of March, really made me comfortable with what we have and what we have going here in terms of their ability to withstand and deal with times when maybe our form hasn't been the best. And it just, the way that the locker room operates made me a little bit more comfortable in getting closer to the deadline before we did anything. And I just think that the way that the group has played this year, the way that they've operated this year, that's made me more comfortable in adding pieces, which you would commonly refer to as rentals, to our group.
And then as far as Frederick goes, when do you expect him to get back on the ice?
I think once the medical team gives him the green light to get back on the ice, that's when he'll be there. I mean, our goal, as I think it was Mark who asked the question, our goal is to just make sure he's 100% healthy here, to be at his best when the team is going to need him the most come playoff time. So I don't have a definitive timeline on it, and I think for everything that Fred's done for the organization for 4.5 years, as I've said to him many times, our focus on this is patience and making sure he's back at 100% and not really putting a huge amount of pressure on him to do that. And that's really why we went out and got Rittich to be able to come in here with Jack and Hutch and form that a really solid kind of threesome of goaltenders before Fred gets rolling.
Next up, we'll go to Josh Clipperton, Canadian Press. Go ahead, Josh.
Hey, Kyle. Yesterday was pretty busy across the league, and from afar, today seemed quieter. I'm just wondering what this deadline was like compared to other ones you've been involved with, considering the quarantine, the flat cap, only playing within your division, and just maybe some teams not knowing exactly what they have.
Yeah, I haven't seen the same. I haven't seen the total number of trades today, Josh. So I can't answer it definitively. I felt like once we had completed the two last trades of Hutton and Suomela deals late in the day today, it just felt a little bit quieter. But it's so hard to speak for what was happening with the other 30 clubs. I think there's a number of factors that may influence what you're referring to. I think expansion coming up, the flat cap, and the fact that even if you may be a little bit out of the playoffs or you're not in the position you want to be in, you probably look ahead and see games against those teams on your schedule and think if you can win those games, you'll improve your lot in the current standing. So I think all those things serve to combine to maybe reduce the amount of activity. It didn't feel that way to me today, but our situation was one in which we were looking to add and in the mix on a lot of things. So I can only speak from our end, and I don't want to unfairly characterize the other clubs and what they were going through.
Yeah, no worries. In terms of the reduction of the quarantine from 14 days to 7 days, did that help in terms of, I'm sure Nick's a guy that's in tremendous shape, but sitting around 14 days compared to 7 days at 33 is a big difference. Did that help justify?
I think so, for sure. I mean, if the way that we looked at it is that, obviously the players are coming in, and the protocols that they're under during those 7 days are daily testing. It's twice daily, or two types of tests here. So we have that on the go, and they're bound to their home like anybody traveling in. And then the other days, they're like all of our players now, and like most people in Ontario, it's for them, they've come to the rink and then go home, and that's it. So there's not a whole lot to do, and it feels very safe that way. But if it had gone to the 14 days, I think that really would have put us in a all the Canadian teams, all seven teams, in a more difficult spot, because if you acquired a player today, by the time they organized, especially in a situation like Nick with a family and three children, you need a couple of days to kind of get organized. Then you're coming 14 days and in the hotel for 14 days. So, that would have been until April 27th, and you don't have a whole lot of games and practices to get up and running before playoffs. So I think it certainly would have been reflected in the price we would have been willing to pay, more so if we came down to today, but probably would have expedited things a little bit sooner in terms of the deadline and when we were looking to do things.
We'll take four more here. We'll go to Mike Zeisberger, NHL.com. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, Kyle, given some of the moves that you made during the off season and the ones you've made now, is this the most versatile team, at least potentially, that you've had in terms of you can play wide open, you can play tight defensively, you can play physical, there just seems to be so many layers of the team right now, and like I said, in terms of versatility.
I think it's just trying to learn from the way that things have gone poorly in the past number of years, Mike, and like in all of the four seasons we've been in the playoffs or the playoff qualifiers in my time here. So the series against Washington, the two Boston series, and the Columbus series, just trying to learn that, trying to learn how we can better get through the regular season without different lulls. And we've talked about that going back to before the season and the importance we were placing on the regular season and why that is so vital to setting us up. And one of the things we talked about in the off season was we just felt that we needed to become more versatile with the roster. We needed to add better experience and guys with more spirit and energy. And now it's just trying to take the year and find what may be missing. But certainly when we get into the playoffs, Mike, I think we're going to need all of those elements that you talked about, the defensive play, the goal scoring, and the toughness. It's going to be harder to score goals. It's going to be harder to defend. And the games are going to become far more physical. So we've tried to address that going back, you know, really going back to adding Muzz 2 years ago and you know, Kyle Clifford last year and Bogosian in the offseason and Simmons in the offseason, Foligno today, even Stefan Nason here leading up to the deadline in the same deal as Nick Foligno and Riley Nash on the defensive side. So, you know, we're trying to get ready for anything. I don't think it can ever be perfect because you don't know the opponents. You don't know where we're at. I think our main focus right now is just using these remaining games and getting as ready as we possibly can for locking ourselves into a playoff spot and getting in first and then locking ourselves into as good a position we can within the division and rolling from there. But I think once we get through into this final stretch, we play Montreal a lot. We've got another four games left against Winnipeg. It's going to be a strong test down the stretch for us as well that I'm looking forward to seeing how the group responds. But once we get there, if we can take care of business here, it'll be about using all of those elements that you mentioned to be at our best. And we think we've addressed some of the deficiencies we've had, and more will come up, and it'll be up to us to address them internally here through development and coaching and accountability for the rest of the way.
You've always been complimentary of Brandon Pridham, and rightly so, but that was even before we had a flat cap. That was before, you know, you're not getting revenues from fans coming into the building. I mean, you know, does this guy deserve a Hart Trophy for capologists, what he's been able to do?
Oh, don't tell him that. It's tough to really put into words what it's like to work with Brandon and the ideas that he comes up with, the just the information he's able to give me to make my job as easy as possible, and his ability to challenge me or tell me when he thinks we're going down a path that might not be best and really optimize our roster, our cap space, all the different things that we're doing. He works tirelessly at it. We've been here basically the whole time together, about a month difference, and the amount that I learned from him and the value that he has the organization and to everybody in management, it's just it's tough to put into words, Mike, and we're just extraordinarily thankful to have him, and I couldn't imagine, it would be really tough to imagine doing the job without him, and he's an indispensable part of the group, you know, it's, I've never worked with anybody else in that realm. I know, like, here in Montreal they have John Sedgwick, he's excellent as well, but I think all of us who do this job without having someone of that caliber in that role, you're definitely shorthanded, so I can't tell you how much I appreciate Brandon on this call, but whatever awards there are for that position, I would certainly think he should win them.
We'll take three more here. We'll go to Lance Hornby, Toronto Sun. Go ahead, Lance.
Hi, Kyle. In adding Nick, that's the fourth former captain, including John Tavares, that you've added to your leadership group. Certainly, he impressed a lot of us last night on his conference call. Can you talk about adding just another voice there? And also, even if Joe Thornton's playing time might be reduced a little with these moves, you know, his contributions still to be made to the team, do you think?
Yeah, I think in terms of the leadership aspect, Lance, I don't think you can ever have enough guys who possess leadership. And you talk about the four players that, you know, John is the captain, you know, Joe, Jason, and Nick have been captains. Nick as recently as yesterday. I also think there's a group forming here of players who could be captain. You never know how things are going to work out, but they certainly could fill that role. And I think we're really, really fortunate with the different styles of leadership we have within the group as well. Like Jake Muzzin brings a lot in terms of leadership. He's very different than Zach Hyman, who brings a lot in terms of leadership. Mitch and Austin are continuing to evolve, and then you have Morgan as well, I think we're very fortunate to have the caliber of character people that are here, and it makes it very, very easy to work and manage, and I know from Sheldon's, and coach them, because they hold each other accountable, and they call each other out on different things, and especially the younger guys are starting to continue to mature into that. So having examples for them to follow as we really get rolling with this thing, and those players start to enter their prime, I think is invaluable to the growth of the program and of the club. With regards to Joe's playing time or anybody's playing time, I think we've got so much to work through here with different quarantines and different things of that nature. What I can tell you about Joe is he is the exact same every day, regardless of what his position is. He's come here for a reason, I think, which he stated repeatedly, and is willing to do whatever it is on and off the ice to help the club get there at this stage in his career. So even when his playing time isn't what it has been in the past, has no impact on Joe's energy and who he is each day, and I think that's been just wonderful for our entire group to see.
All right, there is Kyle Dubas, the GM of the Maple Leafs, speaking. I believe he's in Montreal ahead of the game tonight, and he's been active over the past 48 hours. No other GM in the league has been more active, acquiring Foligno, Riddick, Riley Nash late last week, the Barabanov trade for a younger piece that probably will not play, and even picking up Ben Hutton as a depth defenseman. And with Dave Feshchuk of the Toronto Star, we should point out Kyle will join us at 5:40. But you look at the intangibles, like the tangible production has been evident all year, Dave. Mm-hmm. Like this team is loaded with talent. I believe they can score with any team in the league. Defensively, they have drastically improved. But you bring in a guy like Foligno. By all accounts, Ben Hutton's a great guy. Riley Nash is a veteran in the game. Yeah. Add that to Simmons, Spezza, Tavares, guys like Riley, Joe Thornton. They've got a lot of grizzled vets. And
they do.
It's a combination of that young talent that's ultimately going to drive them, and I think they've pulled their weight, clearly, Matthews, Marner, et cetera, but they've added a bunch of guys who are hungry and that have, quote-unquote, been down the road before.
Yeah, it's the Tampa template, right? This is exactly what Tampa did when they kept kind of butting their head against the brick wall and not breaking through, considering all the talent they had. You know, they added the Blake Colemans and the Barkley Goudreaus to their roster, and suddenly they're cup champions, right? And I think that's – you got to give Dubas credit for that, Hayes. Like, he said, you know, it probably went against some of his instincts, right, to go to grit and compete level as an actual thing, because, you know, guys in the analytics community sometimes scoff at that stuff. But Dubas has embraced it. I think Shanahan's been a big factor in him embracing it.
Absolutely.
And this is where they are.
Yeah, and they're good players. Like, Nick Foligno's a good player. And I think Riley Nash, if he's on your fourth line, offense is not an issue. Like, you have to win some 2-1 games in the playoffs. You got to win some draws. You've got to be able to defend. You have to have multiple players who can kill penalties. And I think they've included or added to their group in terms of what Nash can bring and what Foligno will ultimately bring, and then supplement them with guys like Hutton, guys like Riddick, and you've just got a lot of depth for a team that I believe was the best team in the country 48 hours ago, and I think they're the gap's even larger based on what they have on paper.
No doubt.
Hour two coming up. Ray Ferraro will join us, our TSN hockey analyst. Kyle Dubas will join us at 5:40. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.